I've been watching a lot of Wes Anderson movies lately, and as a little preamble to this episode, I was looking up interviews with Jason Schwartzman. And I found this interview that just has a few nice little parts where he's talking about how on his first movie, Rushmore, when he was like 17, just what a freaky experience that was to go from being a high school kid to suddenly being in a movie. And then he talks a bit about the one-man band that he's in called Coconut Records and just how cool it is to get up in the middle of the night and just if you have an idea for a song, you can make it. Just a pleasant fellow, and I remember Wes Anderson saying that he looked at so many different kids to be in Rushmore and nobody was working out. He almost felt like just shutting down the whole movie because he couldn't find someone to play the main character. And I can kind of see what he means, because just the specific way that Jason Schwartzman is, he just pulled that character off so well. Who else could do that? What would be the point of all this intricate work you do to put together a movie just to have some generic, forgettable teen be the lead? You know, it would suck. This guy's just got a nice vibe to him, and actually my friend Matt mentioned that it just seems like it would be nice to have Jason Schwartzman be your little brother or something, you know? He's just got that vibe. And him saying that brought back this weird memory of the last time I lived in Vancouver, which I get into a bit in this podcast, how things weren't connecting as well as they had before. And I was working up in a projection booth full time, 5 days a week, barely saw anyone, just really isolated. All of my old friends from Vancouver, I didn't really go out of my way to reconnect with because at the end of the day, all we really had in common was that we had all worked at this one coffee shop, you know? So I was just getting really weird and isolated, you know, just being the ghost in the machine running the projection booth. And I remember this one point when I was downtown on my way to work, and I had this voice in my head where I was basically imagining what it would be like if I had an older sister. Just somebody who was older than me, you know, knew a little more about the world, just around to just help me out with stuff. And I just remember running all of my thoughts or my ideas, my potential plans, past this phantom voice in my head and really clearly hearing the answers.
Say that I don't have this down, but I've been practicing out loud.
And I realized all of a sudden that I'd been doing that for like 2 weeks. You know, for like 2 weeks, I had this little weird split personality developing of this theoretical sister that I don't have. And I think that's part of what contributed to me deciding that I should move somewhere else is that I was clearly losing my fucking mind. What a weird memory.
I've got your voice on tape. I've got your words
I've got
in me.
Your words
I've got
in
your
me.
Voice
I've
on
got
tape.
Your
I've got your words
I've
in
got
me.
Your words
I've got
in
your
me.
Voice
I've
on
got
tape.
Your voice
I've got
in
your words
I've
in
got
me.
Your words in me. I don't want anyone else. I don't need anything else.
All the evidence points in one direction. Says I don't need you. physically around.
Anyway, before the show proper starts, here are a few words from Jason Schwartzman.
Met a girl, fell in love, glad as I can be. Met a girl, fell in love, glad as I can be. But I think all the time, is she true to me? 'Cause there's nothing in this world to stop me worrying about that girl.
It's been years now since you did Rushmore, and you were just, what, 16, 17 when that started
17.
Filming?
17. Rushmore, I was just trying to get out in one piece. You know what I mean? It was like, I had no idea that I would be acting in a film. You know, I entered my senior year of high school just trying to get through that. And I ended up, in a matter of 3 weeks, going from just being a senior at high school to being side by side, you know, a Ghostbuster.
Tell me, who can I turn to? Just who can I believe?
And it was totally not part of what I, you know, had in mind for myself or my life at that point. People say, like, you know, what was it like? Did you have fun and all that stuff? And I just kind of think, well, I was just trying not to die, really.
'Cause there's nothing in this world can stop me worrying about that girl.
And I feel like that was my experience during Rushmore. I had a great time. I loved it, but I was just trying. I was so nervous. I had no film experience. I had never acted before, and I was really scared a lot.
Hurts me so when she says nothing. I really feel I die.
I still always am scared, and I always am nervous, but that was just like not even like making the movie. It was just like overwhelmed all the time.
'Cause there's nothing in this world to stop me worrying about that girl. 'Cause there's nothing in this world to stop me worrying about that girl.
Oh, here's my CD. Can I give it to you? Oh, I know we're rolling, but here you go. There's my record for you. This is a record. It's called, my band is called Coconut Records. I made it last summer.
Slow down, you are out of control. One of us is right, one of us is wrong.
And I put it out on my own record label, which is called Young Baby Records. If you go to youngbabyrecords.com, you can order the CD and you get a Polaroid picture that I've taken, because I don't have enough funds to do crazy packaging with like handwritten lyrics and little doodles on it and stuff. I just put out this, and then the Polaroid is something to say, like, but thank you for buying the record. And it's a one-of-a-kind thing, so that an audience, each time someone buys a record, they have their own thing that no one else has.
Slow down, you are out of control. It could be so easy if it didn't feel so wrong.
But it just makes me happy that there could be people out there with the same record, but they each have their own Polaroid and they each feel like they've got their own thing. Because, you know, I'm sure a bigger production or band or whatever doesn't want to take 20,000 Polaroid pictures, but I can do it because we only are taking a couple.
Long time ago, you are my boy.
There is no band. It's just me. But the story is just that I have been writing these songs for a while since I left my old band, and you know, I didn't know what to do with the songs I was writing. And my friend said, "Well, why do you have to think about it? Why can't you just go record all the songs and, you know, just listen to them. And if you like them, then you can think about stuff. And if you don't like it, no one has to ever hear it. And it was kind of a revelation to me, because I always had this idea that you go into record when you're ready to record something worth recording that is meant to be heard.
You are my voice, my microphone.
Now, with the advent of, like, you can do things at home in a less expensive way, I was kind of a revelation. I was like, oh, right, of course, I can just record all this stuff and not have to tell anybody about it. And that's, you know, just do demos of these new songs I was writing. So I made this thinking that no one was going to hear it. I recorded this at my friend's house, and I sat on it for like 5 months. And then my brother was like, you should put it out, you know, you should do it. And then I just started to think, oh, maybe I could start my own label, which, as I say, is just, you know, a domain name and a PayPal account. But, you know, we'll call it a label. That's all you need these days. It's fun to be able to. It's just fun to just do music all the time. You know, I just like recording.
Like, the thing about music is you can write and record music all by yourself anytime. A movie needs to be greenlit, it has a budget. Even for an independent film, even for the smallest independent movie, you still need at least 4, 5, 6 people to all kind of get their schedules together, to all agree. But music, I can wake up and I just can pick up a guitar and start going by myself right there at 3 in the morning. If you shake your heart enough, she will appear. Tonight I think I'll be staying here. In a perfect world, I mean, it doesn't always happen like this. If I woke up in the middle of the night with an idea for a song, I could go and record it that instant and put all the effects on it and have a song done. So I like that it can be that intimate. And I miss you, going back home to the West Coast. I wish you would have put yourself in my suitcase. Just the aesthetic feeling of looking around in a recording studio or at instruments makes me feel really good. Just looking at guitars makes me happy. But picking up an instrument, it just, there's nothing that feels like it. Holding something in your hands that you can play on, it's just so nice. I mean, what other, you don't get that from any other thing. And I miss you, I'm going back home to the West Coast. I wish you would have put yourself in my suitcase. I love you, standing all alone in a black coat. I miss you, I'm going back home to the West Coast. I'm going back home to the West Coast. I'm going back home to the West Coast.
Test, test. Let me set the scene. It's about 3 in the morning, a couple of days after Christmas, and I'm sitting on the train bridge of my hometown. It's this bridge. It used to be a train bridge, and they converted it to a walking bridge. And it just started snowing about 2 or 3 hours ago. It's pretty warm out, but the snow is coming down pretty hard. So I grabbed some of my clunky old equipment that I don't care about as much. I got it stashed in a book bag. While the snow comes down, I'm guessing I probably won't see too many people this time of night. Hopefully nobody. And I have a notebook. I took some rough notes for this episode. It's this old hardcover like art book, sketchbook that I bought years ago that I forgot about, and I found it back in my mom's house, and it's mostly still empty. So since it was a freebie anyway, it doesn't really matter if it gets a little wet. It's weird being awake this time of night. There were, I passed a couple of guys in great big street sweeping, I don't know, they look like backhoes that they've attached shovels to the front of, which maybe they are, I guess it would make sense to get double duty. So these two guys were both parked in the park across the street from my house, just having a chat, having their 3 a.m. meetup, you know, talking about the work day that's going on in the middle of the night. It's kind of cool to see these weird little bits of humanity that you don't normally run into. I've been thinking a lot about night jobs again, because when I get to Toronto, I unfortunately figured out that I'm going to have to get a job pretty much right away. Once I get all my rent paid, I'm only going to have about $500 left, which just isn't that much. That's going to go fast. But that idea that I was going to have to get a job right away, it made this Toronto trip more stressful. It's a lot more fun to just go to a city and just get to fuck around for a couple months and just get to know it, not have any pressure. And also, things have just been uncomfortable in my house. That cliche of Christmas and the family getting together and everyone drinking too much and then getting in fights. Never really thought of that as a real thing, or like that's just something that happens to other people, but apparently it can happen to my family too. And it's kind of a shame because I'm leaving really soon in like maybe just a little over a week. Really don't want to end out the time here fighting with people, but... I don't know, it's weird. I have a pretty short fuse. It's easy for me to lose my temper, but I don't know, sadly, I really think I've dealt with that better than the other members of my family. Like, I really come from some weird stock of just hard-headedness, easy to anger, slow to forgive, you know? It's weird. I've always considered those things to be some of my greater failings, but I'm really doing better with them than the rest. Anyway, walking home earlier tonight, I was walking across this bridge before it started snowing, and I had just watched the movie The Darjeeling Limited with my friend Brad. And I was in a really good mood. After watching that movie, it really made all of these little problems that aren't really big problems, but, you know, all problems seem bigger to you, you know? Inside my life, these are my problems. Not huge in the grand scheme of things, but enough to get me down. So having that movie in my head, like just having seen it and having the tone of it and the feel of it and the music from it in my head while I walked across this bridge, just really made everything seem so much nicer, you know? Like, movies are just a selective view of reality. You just take your little slice and you present it. And when a movie affects you the right way, that stays with you and you bring it out into the world and it helps you see things, you know, just see through the right prism and have the right perspective on things, and it just really had me in a good mood, and that gave me the idea to do a show a little bit about the power of movies. Here's a nice line from my notebook: that the feeling I had after watching that movie and walking home, it makes moving to Toronto feel like an adventure rather than a struggle. One thing I noticed while watching that movie is The first part of the movie takes place in a train. That's what the name comes from. The train is called the Darjeeling Limited. And it just seems like such a comfortable environment. It just seems like a place you would want to be. It would be so cool to be on that train and to go on a journey. And just even the little things like the stewardess bringing you sweet lime drink and just little details. And I was thinking how I could potentially take a train to Toronto, but it's I have to go to another city about an hour and a half away, catch the train there, go to Toronto. It's fairly expensive. You know, I could take a plane for the same price. But it would be neat to do. I don't think I'm going to, but it would be neat for the memory. You know, it would such a cool way to travel and such a rare thing to do that I was considering it just for the memories. I've really learned a lot lately, the value of nostalgia. It's like it's basically a positive of our design that we tend to remember things in a good way. Sometimes better than how they really were. And I really think that's kind of a great thing. It's like, even if you go through struggles, even if things in your life are hard and you do things that are difficult, and they may not be very fun at the time, it may be a struggle, but you're building up a bank of memories to look back on later. Like when I'm an old man, it's nice to know that I've gone so many places and done things that I will remember fondly. As opposed to the few years after high school where I just puttered around my hometown and I don't remember a goddamn thing. Like, it's just a blur. Whereas things are much more delineated in my mind after that. Things seem so much more clear. I can remember where I was this year, where I was the next year. I mean, well, I heard a quote from Ricky Gervais once talking about how your 30s is when you should really buckle down and work hard. That's when you should get your money so that when you're old you'll have money and you won't have to work. And I view things similarly, but not with money. I don't know. I mean, I've kind of just made my peace with the fact that I'm never going to have a lot of money. I'm not going to have a lot of savings. I will probably always have to work. And I'm sure when I'm an old man, I'm going to curse my young self for making that decision. But what I'm doing is collecting memories. I'm going all around trying to do things that are hard to do, trying to make choices in life that are kind of difficult or uncomfortable because I know I'm going to appreciate it later. Like I said, those few years after high school, I got a few things done. I wrote 3/4 of a novel that I'll hopefully finish someday. I did a lot of music on computer that didn't really go anywhere, but it's good to know that I can do it. Like, it taught me that I can compose music. I have that ability. You know, if I want to develop it more, it got my foot in the door. So I did some things. But if there was any wasted time, that was it. But after that, once I first moved to Vancouver, everything since then, when I compare it to my other path in life, which would have been to go to school, get a degree, get a job, most people my age, people I knew back in school and stuff, have houses and have families and have kids, you know, all that stuff. And I don't. But all of the stuff I talked about in the last podcast about moving to Vancouver and meeting Erica and then moving home and babysitting my niece Allie and then going to New York, I wouldn't trade in this stuff for the alternative. You know, this is worth it to me. This is equally valuable in its own way. It's not financially very helpful. It's going to mean that the old man me will be a greeter at Walmart or whatever the fuck, but I don't regret any of that, and I wouldn't trade it in. And Toronto is going to be another piece, another link in this chain. So what I was saying about the Darjeeling Limited is, if you were really on a train, even a fairly nice train going across India, there would be a lot of things about that trip that wouldn't be fun. There would be a lot of toil to it. There'd be kind of, I don't know, hardship is maybe too hard of a word, but probably most of it would be a mix between mundane and mildly difficult. But when you looked back on it, it would seem really great. You know, it would be such a unique setting and such a rare thing to do. The memories would be fantastic, and that's what movies seem like. Movies are like your memories, but immediately. You know, they're pre-cut. They're already trimmed down and edited to just the parts that are exciting. And to take it a step further, when a movie really hits you, it almost feels like a religious experience to me, like a religious event. I remember The Shawshank Redemption was the first time I felt that way about a movie, where it affected me so strongly, it just instantly became my favorite movie, and still is my favorite movie. But in all of these years that it's been my favorite, I haven't actually watched it very many times, and I've never watched it with somebody else. And I think I probably never will watch it with somebody else. Because that feeling that I get from it is just, it's too important. You know, I don't want it to be sapped away by someone else. And I don't want to have someone next to me. You know, you can feel their headspace. If they're not getting it like I am, if they're not feeling what I'm feeling, I don't want that to muddle up what I'm experiencing. Even with churches, I really think empty churches are way nicer than full churches, because I just don't like the idea of just this rabble, you know, this mass of average people just stomping their feet through something that is nice, you know, that would be nicer without them. So I'm really glad I didn't see The Shawshank Redemption with anybody, that I happened to see it by myself. And if you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend it. But please don't watch it in like a little window on your computer while you're doing something else, you know, while you're in a chat room, or don't watch it with your buddies. There's been several times over the years when I've recommended that movie, then when I hear back about the scenario under which it was watched, it just gets me down. It's like, fuck, why'd you even bother? Just don't watch it then. Get that movie and just watch it by yourself. One thing I thought was interesting about The Shawshank Redemption is something I read in a book about Shawshank, and I'll get into that a bit more in a bit. But it's that the movie, The Shawshank Redemption, seems to be aware of movies as this important spiritual force. There's a movie theater in the movie. The movie's about prisoners, and the movie theater in the prison is actually in their chapel room. It's not visible in the movie. It got cropped out of the shot, or there wasn't room to put it in, but that actual set, if you see pictures from the set, has a big stained glass window in it. And the very, just the visuals of the prisoners watching the movie, it's always, well, it's just the way you watch a movie. It's your face upturned, the light on your face, you know, people enthralled or smiling. Just that basic physical action of having your head raised instead of bowed. I remember there's a similar line in the book Atlas Shrugged, where it's talking about looking up at the stars, and just how the act of having your head raised feels strong, you know, it makes you feel the power of being a human being. There's just something about it. And then in Shawshank, they take the analogy a step further, where Andy, the main character, he eventually steps through a movie poster into a better place, you know, like the transportative effects of movies, of just taking you away from where you are or your problems and just taking your mind somewhere better. So since I'm moving soon, it made me think of previous times that I moved and the effect that movies had during those moves. This one is a little different. It's not necessarily a movie, it's TV, you know, the little brother of movies. But the first day I got to Vancouver, I moved there all by myself. I had a hotel room for 2 days, but I had no plans at all. It was really a shockingly bad setup, like so little pre-planning. I didn't know anyone there. I hadn't scouted out any kind of place to stay. Nothing. I just got there and then I was going to figure it out. I mean, part of this move, why I forced myself to do this, is because I had dragged my feet so much after high school and not really gotten out into the world much. I always worked the same job. I just felt like there was so much about the world I didn't know and that I wasn't ready for and that I didn't feel effective. I didn't feel like I could just walk out into the world and be okay, I guess. And when I got to Vancouver, that was really brought to the forefront because I remember opening up a paper and looking for places to stay, and I didn't know the difference between renting a whole apartment or shared accommodations, and people had warned me how expensive Vancouver is. So I was looking through this paper and just finding massively expensive listings, because this would be an apartment you would share with, you know, two or three people. And I knew that with the amount of money I had, I just wasn't going to last any time. I couldn't last with that kind of financial burden, and I just assumed that's how the world was, that everyone was somehow making ends meet, and I just didn't know how to do it. And then I remember I took a bath in that hotel room, and I think this is, I don't know, it's just such a guy thing to just be embarrassed about talking about times that you cried. I mean, what could be more justified than this? Not only am I thousands of miles away on the other end of the country, all by myself for the first time, but I'm totally isolated. Nobody knows me, and beyond that, I'm in a hotel room, in a bathroom, in a bathtub. I couldn't be more alone. There's no way someone is going to find out about this. There's no way someone is going to see me. There couldn't be a more appropriate time to cry. But it's still hard for me to say that, you know? I have to jump through all these hoops, and I have to explain all of this before I say that. But coincidentally, that day happened to be the series finale of that TV show Friends. And I hadn't seen Friends in years, since I was back in high school. I remember the very first year it was on TV, I watched it, and I thought it was kind of funny, and then it lost me real fast. But I'd seen it enough that I knew all the characters, I knew who everybody was, and then watching that finale on TV, man, it was shocking how much better it made me feel to be connected again and to realize that as far away as I was still in the same culture, I was still in the same society. Here was this show from my old life, from my old past, and it just brought everything into sharp focus to just make me realize that I wasn't really so far away. I mean, maybe it seems shallow to talk about movies and TV as this central glow of our mass culture, but that's what it did. It's the same way I never used to care for malls all that much until I moved away, and then I could find it comforting because everywhere you go, the mall is sort of the same, and you feel like you're sort of back home a little bit.
Drink up, baby, down. Are you in or are you out? Leave your things behind. Cause it's all going off without you. Excuse me, too busy. You're writing your tragedy. These mishaps you bubble wrapped when you've no idea what you're like.
And then I remember waking up the next morning, and because there's a 4-hour time difference, I woke up really early. You know, what was 10 a.m. for me before was now 6 a.m. And I got up and walked down the street to get some breakfast, and it was just a lot of old people awake mostly because it was so early. And I just remember smiling and saying hello to the old people and seeing how the buses in Vancouver, most of them run on like a trolley line. Like there's a line that goes up from the bus to a cable that powers it. They don't run on gasoline. and just such a, what a weird, different thing, you know? Like, I was still in North America, I'm still in Canada, but there's things like that. There's just little things that are different that made it clear that I had traveled to this new weird land, you know? I was far away, and it felt so much better by that next morning.
Such boundless pleasure, we've no time for leaving now. You can't wait, you're on arrival, you 20 seconds to comply. So let go, let go, just jump in. Oh, what you waiting for? It's alright.
And then it took a couple tries to find a good apartment that worked out, but I finally did find one that I stayed at for quite a while. And it was super Spartan. I didn't own anything. I had just the couch that was already there that I slept on. And I had a really old laptop that I brought with me that I got the oldest one I could find deliberately because I didn't want it to be able to play games or play movies or anything. I couldn't connect it to the internet. I couldn't do anything with this except write. I wanted to just try to write a novel and not be distracted. But man, it was tough being in this room, just this empty room. At this point, I'd had a job as a dishwasher and I hated it and I quit, so I was between jobs too. Just being in this room with nothing but me and this computer and like a stack of library books, and I didn't know anyone, and it was just mental. And I remember I would never hesitate to spend money on a movie. It never felt like I was wasting money doing that, because I just felt like I needed it. Like, it just centered me to go to a movie theater and watch a movie with people. This time was nice. It didn't have to be a lot of people, even if it was a theater that just had a few people in it. Even probably if it was empty. I mean, just that feeling of being in a theater, it was crazy how effective it was. Like, I never thought of myself as really a movie guy. I was never that obsessed with movies. But of course, I watch movies all the time. I've seen hundreds of movies. Everyone has. And I think we're all movie people. We're all highly movie obsessed. We just don't understand that we are, because we didn't hit those super levels of obsession. And we've just never been away from them. You know, it was the first time I had not just been around movies, and movies hadn't been available. And it was amazing what a lack I felt, that I needed these sometimes. I needed, even if it wasn't a great movie, just these stories of our society. Like, I mean, it's like, I always remember this one story that Iroquois Indians used to tell about mosquitoes. And the story was that there used to just be one gigantic mosquito who was so big that he would just skewer like 10 men, just stab them through. And he was just a menace and a horrible nightmare creature. And then eventually a bunch of braves got together, a bunch of warriors of the tribe went out and found this fucking mosquito and butchered the fuck out of it and finally killed it and finally saved their tribe from this nightmare. But when they slid it open, out of its belly came thousands and thousands of the little tiny mosquitoes that we know today. And that's their story for where mosquitoes came from. And the idea was that if you were out in the woods and you were getting bit by mosquitoes, instead of being demoralized, you would think, that's right, fuckers, that's why you're just these little mosquitoes, because my tribe went and just killed what you used to be. We beat you already, and this is all you got left. Let's wasn't true at all, but it was just valuable to them, you know? It made their days easier. It made them feel stronger. And I think in a way that's what our movies do, even our mediocre movies. Just, even if it's stories we tell over and over, things that get boring, things that seem cheesy, things that aren't even that good. I mean, we've all watched bad movies. We've all had fun just watching shit and just, you go on a marathon, maybe you watch all the Friday the 13th movies, whatever. And there's something about that that's valuable to us. And when I didn't have it, I could really feel it. It got to the point where I would go to the library and just get books about movies. That's where I got the book about Shawshank. There was this whole series of books that I think the BBC put out where they'd get their most famous reviewers to write a short book about famous and notable movies. So I was reading books about movies. Then, since my computer could only handle text, I remember I went to some internet kiosk and I downloaded a bunch of movie scripts. I remember the Quentin Tarantino ones in particular, reading through those. And it was just surprising how much of my life was still revolving around movies when I didn't have a TV and I didn't have anything. I remember I went to see the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind early on, and it was one of those rare days when I was drunk. I didn't do that very much, but occasionally I would get drunk and just wander around the city. And I was feeling a sort of connectedness to the world through drinking, you know, it helps you kind of double-edged sword, you know, it helps you fight with people, but it helps you feel closer to them sometimes also. And I remember I called home right before the movie started. That's never something I do very much. I don't keep in touch with people very well. And I called home and only my brother was home, and I have not gotten along with him in a long time, so I mean, we didn't really talk, but I just thought it was notable that right before I went to a movie, I felt like calling home. I felt like I wanted to talk to people. And then I went in and saw the movie, and it was okay, but what really stuck with me is that's when I first saw the teaser trailer for Garden State. That it's only a minute or two long, there's no dialogue, it's just visuals, just images. And I'm going to put a link to this thing in my show notes, and I really, really want everyone to go watch it if you haven't seen it, even if you have, just to watch it again, because I still think to this day it's my favorite piece of video ever. It's so well made. It's just amazing. And under those circumstances of just being in this new big city and no one knowing me and just sort of feeling like a ghost and having a hard time becoming corporeal, you know, getting together and feeling like getting established and coming back to life in this new place, it was incredibly effective. It really, really moved me. It's just these images of disconnection of a guy who's not part of what's happening, you know, he's just kind of numb, and I couldn't believe how effective that little piece of video was. I started getting into this habit where I'd go to this one little internet kiosk that was, I think I had a new job by this point, but I would stop into this thing all the time and just watch that trailer, just put in headphones and just watch it two or three times every day for a long time. Drink a baby down, my wind all right out. Leave your things behind, cause it's all going off without you. And my expectations for it were way too high. Like, what I was asking it to do for me was impossible. When the movie finally came out, it didn't hit me that same way, but I still really liked it. I really feel like watching that trailer really helped anchor me to things. Just as an example, I found an old short story I started working on that I didn't finish. And this is a little section of it. Sometimes I think that what people perceive as strength is what I have. Disconnectedness. You aren't bothered by things because you don't care that they're happening. Nothing reaches you, the world goes by without you. You can fall back farther and farther until you're watching things happen on a tiny little screen surrounded by black. And if you turn your head just slightly in any direction, you won't notice that either. Maybe it's melodramatic, I don't know if I'll put that in. It's alright, because there's beauty in breakdown. The point is, I was feeling massively disconnected from things, and that trailer just reminded me of human artistry and of things that are valuable to me and really helped. And then, this was quite a bit later. This was after I moved away from Vancouver and then moved back and was trying to get the second go, trying to rekindle the magic. I went to see that Danny Boyle movie, Sunshine. I always went to every Danny Boyle movie because he did some great shit. And Sunshine was not a great movie. By the end, it kind of degenerated into just a crazy guy with a knife chasing them around a spaceship, which seems silly, but initially the premise was this team was sent out on a ship to try to find a way to reignite the sun, and if they failed, that was it. The human race was going to freeze and we were all going to die. And this epic story of trying to keep the human race alive, watching this after I'd been in Vancouver for a few months and just feeling that I wasn't getting traction and just knowing that it wasn't going to work this time, it was like the other side of the coin of years before when I cried in that bathtub when I first got to Vancouver. This time I was sitting down near the front, not many people in the theater, no one could see me, and I definitely remember crying at that movie, and just not about the movie, but just It jarred me enough to unlock the understanding in me that this wasn't working and this wasn't gonna work. And it wasn't like that first time when I woke up the next day with feeling better and feeling assured. This time I knew it was time to move on. And it seemed totally appropriate that it was in a movie theater that I came to that realization. And then I remember that before I left Vancouver, that was when the Darjeeling Limited came out. That was the first time I saw it. And again, just such an appropriate movie to see before a person is about to travel. That's when I had decided that my next move was going to be to New York. And the movie is about people traveling across India on a train. Just perfect. So I remember watching that movie and feeling much more comfortable with the move. The same way that I do this time, the same way watching it again made me more comfortable with this move. That's another one of those moments I just remember really clearly in Vancouver when I first saw Darjeeling Limited, and then I stepped out of the theater and I put in my headphones, and that was the first time I listened to Radiohead's new album In Rainbows, and this was the first song that played, and it combined so perfectly with the feeling I had at that moment that it just seared into my memory. Cool tune of acceptance that I'm gonna travel and life is gonna change. Things are gonna be kind of hard, but it's all gonna turn out well and it's all gonna be worth it and the memories are going to be good. XO number 12. For more shows, go to keithcourage.com.